Trigger warning. The following episode discusses depression, suicide, alcohol addiction, and drug addiction. If you or someone you know is suicidal, get help immediately via your local emergency number. If you live in the United States, dial 911 for immediate help. Call the National Suicide Prevention Line at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or text HOME to the crisis text line at 741-741. If you are suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, you can contact the National Helpline at 1-800-622-HELP. That's 1-800-622-4357. These resources are free and confidential. Trigger warning. The following episode discusses depression, suicide, alcohol addiction, and drug addiction. If you or someone you know is suicidal, get help immediately via your local emergency number. If you live in the United States, dial 911 for immediate help. Call the National Suicide Prevention Line at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or text HOME to the crisis text line at 741-741. If you are suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, you can contact the National Helpline at 1-800-622-HELP. That's 1-800-622-4357. These resources are free and confidential. Hello, everyone. My name is Hannah, and you are listening to Mystic and Murder, a paranormal, unexplained, and true crime podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing part one of the mysterious and tragic death of Phoebe Handstrick. Phoebe was born in Australia on May 9, 1986. She was the oldest child with younger brothers named Thomas and Nikolai. Her friends and family remember her as a vibrant, cheeky girl. She lit up any room she walked into. She was beautiful. She had brown hair, hazel eyes, and a gorgeous smile. She was very creative. She loved to journal, write poetry, and paint. She was described as adventurous and a bit of a wild child. One of her friends from art school actually recalled her getting on the top of a building at a party once and jumping from roof to roof. Born in the Chinese Year of the Tiger, her mom Natalie called Phoebe her little tiger cub. She was strong, but gentle. In an interview with 60 Minutes Australia, Natalie said, quote, "She was gentle and she was smart and she was all those things, but if you crossed her, look out because she really, really came out fighting." End quote. Not only did Phoebe have a strong personality, but she was physically strong as well. She was incredibly athletic. She loved to climb things, go hiking, rock climbing, and camping. She enjoyed kickboxing and karate. She actually got her black belt within 2 years while training at the Melbourne Fight Club. However, not everything about Phoebe's life reflected the bright and cheery personality that her friends and family remember her for. Unfortunately, Phoebe suffered from depression as well as alcohol and substance abuse. It started when she was a teenager. Starting at the age of 13, Phoebe and her friends would go out on the town using fake IDs to get into bars. Her friends recalled that they would go out with probably $20 between them, but the men at the bar would usually buy all of their drinks. Phoebe would go home with money still in her pocket, as well as drugs that she had scored from the older men. She began using and binge drinking at the age of 14. Alcohol seemed to turn her into a much different person. It would depress her mood, she would become extremely clumsy, and it would cause her to become somewhat angry at times. She tried many times in her life to recover, but eventually she would relapse and binge again. Her parents, Natalie and Len, divorced in her teenage years. At the age of 15, she ran away from home for a period of 8 weeks. By 16, her general practitioner had described an antidepressant to her, which she would go off and on by herself. Her father, Len, is a psychiatrist himself. He didn't treat his own daughter, of course, due to conflict of interest, but he did not agree with her being on antidepressants at such a young age. When it came to her relationships, Phoebe would give them her all. She was really close with her family and probably closest to her grandmother Jeanette, who was described as being Phoebe's confidant. When it came to intimate relationships, Phoebe had a pattern of dating older men. When she was in 10th grade, Phoebe was 16 years old and she had entered into a relationship with a teacher who was 30 years old. In Australia, the age of consent is 16. The teacher began working at another school after they started dating, and he actually lived with Phoebe in her mom's house for quite some time. Natalie described the relationship as a stable and loving one that lasted for several years. She also said that Phoebe's life mirrored her own in a lot of ways. She too had a relationship with a teacher when she was about the same age. In fact, there seemed to be a generational pattern in her family. Phoebe's father was 14 years older than her mother, and her grandma's partner was 11 years older. At the time of Phoebe's death, she was dating a man 19 years her senior named Anthony Hampel, who goes by Ant for short. In all, Phoebe's life can be best summarized by a quote from her mom taken from the 60 Minutes Australia documentary. She said, quote, "It's a short and intense and dynamic life she led. It had its ups and downs, but she drove it like she stole it." End quote. Now let's talk about Phoebe and Ant's relationship. The two met in 2009 while Phoebe was working as a receptionist for one of Melbourne's most elite hair salons, and Ant was a usual customer. Phoebe was 23 years old at the time, and Ant was 43. Here's a bit of background about Ant. He's the founder and director of a premier events management company. His clients range from high-end celebrities to leading global companies. Some of his clients included AC/DC, Prince, Michael Jackson, and Paris Hilton, to name a few. Ant comes from a prominent legal family, with his father George being a retired Supreme Court judge and his stepmother Felicity a human rights lawyer and county court judge. 5 months into the relationship, Phoebe moved in with Ant. They lived on the 12th floor of a luxury apartment building in Melbourne called the Balencia. Phoebe's family said that, other than a few pictures of Phoebe, it was hard to tell that she lived there. Phoebe was artsy with a bohemian style. Growing up, she would have her artwork displayed all over, but the apartment was modern, sleek, and always clean. It seemed that Ant liked things a certain way, and although Phoebe paid him $150 a week for rent, no personal touches of hers could be seen in the apartment. Phoebe's mom said it usually looked as though no one lived there. They had been together for 18 months at the time of Phoebe's death, but Phoebe and Ant had a bit of a rocky relationship. At some point while they were together, Phoebe was attending art school and had developed somewhat of an obsession with her art teacher, who was, again, an older man. She had sent him an email demanding that he have an affair with her. He accused her of stalking, and she was thrown out of art school. Her grandpa, Lorne, a retired police detective, stated that Phoebe did have strong feelings for Ant, but she knew the relationship wasn't going anywhere and she wanted to get out of it. Phoebe's family all agree that Phoebe was thinking about leaving the relationship. She and Ant had an upcoming trip to go to Paris at Christmas time, and Phoebe actually expressed concern to some of her family and friends, saying that she was worried Ant would try to propose in Paris. Phoebe's father, Len, was worried about this as well, saying that if she married Ant, quote, "it would be like stepping into a straitjacket," end quote. Vanessa Levin, a longtime friend of Ant who had become very close with Phoebe, said that Phoebe did intend to leave the relationship. Phoebe had expressed to her that Ant was controlling and she felt as though she didn't have a voice in the relationship. Phoebe's family noted a change in her physical appearance when she was with Ant as well. Her long brown hair had been cut into a short pixie style and dyed black. Phoebe's grandma Jeanette said it actually looked really similar to Aunt's sister, Christina's hairstyle. She also stated that before the relationship, if Phoebe felt like looking or dressing casual, she would, but when she was with Aunt, it seemed like there was a mold that Phoebe thought she had to fit. In a statement to police, Aunt described their relationship as being very up and down. He said that when Phoebe wasn't drinking, things were great, but when she was, the relationship would become very strained. In the last 6 weeks before Phoebe died, she and Aunt had separated on 4 different occasions, and Phoebe had spent several nights away from the home that they shared together. There were a few notable things that happened in the weeks leading up to her death, starting with an email exchange between Phoebe and her mom. On October 4th, Natalie had sent Phoebe an email with pictures from her work trip to the Western Desert. She said she wished Phoebe could come out there one day, and she thought she would love it. Phoebe's response to Natalie on October 5th read, quote, "I would love to be able to come out there and see where you are, and you know, I'd give any excuse to get out of here. I have been thinking about my 21st present, and I would like you to hang on to that for me, for there may be a time in my life that I need to get away without much notice, and I would like to have an international flight available for me. I also ask that you don't mention anything of this to anyone, and I won't bring it up again unless I need it. I have thought long and hard about this and have made my decision, so if the offer still stands, would that be okay? I'm very pleased that this trip is only an 8-week one, and I hope we can have many more visits when you return. Missing you and love you lots. XOX." End quote. When Phoebe had turned 21, Natalie had offered to send her on an international trip to celebrate her birthday. Phoebe, now 24, had held on to that offer, and now it seemed as if there may be an urgency to use it, as well as a secrecy behind the reason why. On October 20th, Phoebe went to stay with her grandmother in Mallacoota. During that time, she decided that she was going to get sober, and she decided that she was leaving Aunt for good. She even texted an old boss of hers and secured a job working at the golf course that she had previously worked at. She had only been there for 3 days when her grandma suggested that she go back to Melbourne, break up with Aunt in person, and quit her job properly. She agreed that she should, so Phoebe went back to Melbourne with the intention of saying her farewells, but somehow Aunt convinced her to stay. A few weeks later, on November 17th, Aunt and Phoebe attended a dinner with Phoebe's friend, Linda Cohen. During dinner, Phoebe and Aunt got into a fight because Phoebe was on her phone. Aunt was angry, so he left without her. Phoebe stayed with Linda and confided in her and decided that this time she was serious. She was going to leave Aunt. She stayed the night at Linda's house that night. The next day, Linda drove Phoebe to the Valencia and helped her to pack all her things. Afterwards, they returned to Linda's house and Phoebe stayed the night again. The following day, still at Linda's, Phoebe called her mom and asked if she could rent the cottage that she owned in Mallacoota. It seemed that Phoebe had everything in place that she would need to live in Mallacoota and get back on her own 2 feet. On November 20th, Aunt called her and asked if they could meet up and talk. Phoebe agreed, and over the course of this meeting, she decided that once again, she was going to move back in with Aunt. 3 days later, on November 23rd, Phoebe's dad, Len, received a phone call at 10 a.m. It was Phoebe, and she told him that Aunt threw her out and she needed to be picked up. Len dropped everything he was doing and picked her up from the curb with her suitcase and guitar in hand. She stayed at Len's house for a few nights, but on November 25th, Phoebe agreed to meet Aunt for dinner, and again, she was convinced to come back. This is also when they decided that they would take a trip to Paris. The following day, she met with Linda for lunch and told her that she and Aunt were back together and how she was really excited about their trip to Paris. The following week would be Phoebe's last. On the Sunday of the week of her death, Phoebe Skyped her mom, Natalie, who was still on her work trip. Natalie said that at the time of the Skype call, Phoebe was sitting in a dark room. It had been a few days since she had gotten back with Aunt, so her mom asked if they had patched things up. Natalie recalls Phoebe lifting her finger up to her mouth as if gesturing her to be quiet, and responded, "Aunt and I are just watching a movie in the other room." Natalie feels like Phoebe obviously wanted to tell her something, but couldn't. They talked about her brother Nikolai's upcoming birthday celebration at Natalie and Russell's house, and Phoebe confirmed that she would be there on Friday at 8 a.m. to help set up. Nikolai had already turned 18 on November 16th, but they held off the celebration until Natalie's return home. Phoebe and her brother were very close, and Phoebe was really excited for this party. On Monday morning, Phoebe met with her dad for their weekly breakfast date. They had made plans to go out to dinner together on Thursday to celebrate his birthday. After breakfast, Phoebe went to her weekly therapy appointment. Her psychologist reported her mood as being very low. Later that night, Aunt and Phoebe attended dinner at their friends Matt and Julia Rockman's house. Apparently, dinner ended abruptly. Phoebe had told her friend Vanessa about what had happened at the dinner. She was opening up to Julia about personal matters like her depression, and Aunt quickly shut her down and attempted to change the conversation. They left shortly after. They got home around 7:50 p.m. When they got home, they were arguing and screaming at each other, so Phoebe left. She called her friend Linda and asked if she could stay at her house again, and Linda welcomed her to, but said that she needed to get up early the next morning for a meeting. Phoebe wanted to stay up, and she wanted company, so she decided against staying with Linda that night. She called up her friend Brendan Hessian to meet for a drink at the European Beer Cafe. Bren said that they met at 11:30 p.m. and hung out for about half an hour. During this time, Phoebe told Bren that she wanted to go back to Malacuta. Bren noted that Phoebe's phone kept ringing, and it was Aunt each time. Phoebe seemed pretty annoyed by this. Bren said that she was so annoyed that when they got outside the venue and her iPhone rang again, she threw it across the street and it broke. They departed ways around 12 a.m. Bren was going home to sleep, and Phoebe was on to the next thing. Phone records from that night show that Aunt called Phoebe's phone 27 times between 11:30 p.m. and 12:30 a.m. After leaving the bar, Phoebe goes to Natalie and Russell's house around 12:45 a.m. Natalie was still on her work trip, but Russell was home and they talked until about 3 a.m., and Russell made up a bed for her to stay. Phoebe had told Russell that she loved Aunt, but wanted to leave him because of the way he acted when she was, quote, not on top of her game, end quote. On Tuesday morning, Phoebe wakes up around 7 a.m. and tells Russell that she's going to work. He welcomes her to come back after work and stay there again if she wanted to. She left, but instead of going to work, swipe card records show that she returned back to her apartment and made a succession of calls. First, she called Alfred Hospital, where she remained on the phone for 11 and a half minutes. Next, she called her general practitioner's office, but this phone call only lasted 46 seconds. After that, she called her psychologist, Joanna Young, and they spoke for half an hour. Phoebe expressed that she was, quote, extremely distressed about relationship issues and was drinking, end quote. Joanna stated that Phoebe expressed feeling alone and helpless and said she felt, quote-unquote, unsafe. Towards the end of their conversation, Joanna noted that Phoebe was calmer but still suicidal. Joanna had other clients to see, so she asked if there was someone she could go to, but Phoebe said that there wasn't and she didn't want anyone to see her that way. Joanna gave Phoebe numbers for three different crisis lines that she could call. Before hanging up, Phoebe agreed that she would call a helpline. Joanna advised her to go to Alfred Hospital if she continued to feel unsafe. Later that day, just before 4 p.m., Phoebe sent a text to her grandmother that read, quote, I'm okay, I'll call you tomorrow, kiss kiss, end quote. Then, Phoebe went out on the town again. Around 4 p.m., Phoebe met up with a man that she befriended in art school, and they went for coffee. This man gave a statement about the time they spent together that Tuesday night, but went unnamed. He stated that she seemed coherent and that they had great conversation. After their talk, she persuaded him to take her to a dealer so she could make a buy. He complied, and she bought two ecstasy tablets. She took one and later tried to kiss him. He claims that he told her no and that she became violent, which he just attributed to the drugs. Phoebe returned home at 12:30 a.m. On Wednesday morning, a strange text message was sent from her iPhone at 10:33 a.m. It read, quote, Hi family, I'm in bed about to sleep, and when I wake, I will transform into the most incredible human being you've ever seen. Not. I will go to hospital. It's much safer there, and I hear the special tonight is tomato soup. Delicious. Nutritious. I love you all very much, but not enough to send you all an individual text. Sorry about that, but time is sleep, and I must be on my way. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. End quote. This text was sent to Len, Natalie, Aunt, her brothers Tom and Nikolai, her grandma Jeanette, and her stepdad Russell. Phoebe's grandpa Lorne did not receive the text message. Phoebe didn't respond to any replies to this text. When Natalie received the text, she was traveling back home from her work trip at this point and was waiting to board a plane. She had to turn her phone off at any second, so she quickly called her mother Jeanette and asked if she could contact Aunt to check in on Phoebe and see what was going on. Jeanette then called Aunt, who said that he would check in on her. He later assured Jeanette and Natalie that all was well. Something strange to add here is that Phoebe actually had two cell phones. The iPhone, which was actually owned by Aunt, but he gave it to Phoebe for her to use, and an old Nokia. There are conflicting accounts of the whereabouts of Phoebe's iPhone at this time. On Monday night, she had thrown the iPhone out of frustration and it broke. In a statement from Aunt, he initially said that he had taken the phone for repair on Wednesday morning when he left for work. This would mean that Phoebe was not in possession of the phone when this text was sent. Aunt later changed his statement, saying it was more likely that he took the phone in for repair on Thursday. On Wednesday afternoon, Shelley Tonkin, the cleaner, came into the apartment. Phoebe was asleep when Shelley entered the apartment. She was surprised because Phoebe usually wasn't there when she came to clean. Phoebe told Shelley that she had the flu, but Shelley assumed it was more likely that she was hungover but just didn't want to say so. Shelley said that she asked Phoebe if she needed anything, and Phoebe smiled and said no, that she was fine. Shelley said Phoebe did not seem at all depressed to her that day. When Aunt returned home that night, he said he made her dinner, drew her a bath, and gave her vitamins, and he showed her that he had purchased the tickets from Paris in hopes to excite her. On Wednesday night, Phoebe called her dad from Anthony's iPhone. Their conversation was about 10 minutes long, and they discussed their dinner plans for the following day. On Thursday, December 2nd, 2010, Aunt left for work at 9 a.m. Phoebe was still in bed, sleeping peacefully with her dog, Yoshi. A fire alarm was set off at 11:43 a.m., and Phoebe can be seen walking out of the building with her sunglasses, a big black handbag, and her dog. It was determined that it was a false alarm. There was construction going on in the building, and some of the dust and smoke from the power tools had set off the alarm. Phoebe can be seen entering back into the building 7 minutes later at 11:50 a.m. This would be the last time that Phoebe was seen alive. Swipe card records show that Aunt returned home from work at 6:09 p.m. When he entered the apartment, Phoebe wasn't home. He doesn't recall if the door was locked or unlocked upon his arrival, but he did notice some strange things upon his entry into the apartment. He noticed a glass on the kitchen table, which he said smelled like it had vodka in it. There was a broken glass and a ripped cushion on the floor. There were post-it notes all over the kitchen with incoherent scribbles on them. Phoebe's purse and keys were still on the counter. Her hair straightener was plugged in and turned on as if she had been getting ready for their dinner with Len that night. Candles were lit, and Aunt found a shrine in the bedroom. He said that the shrine was a photo of them, a picture of Phoebe's cat, and more post-it notes with ramblings on them. Her journal was on the bed. Oh. And he said he found blood on the computer mouse. Aunt assumed that Phoebe would be right back because she never left anywhere without her bag. He also assumed that she had to be in the building somewhere because she had left her keys, and the Balencia required a key card to get anywhere. You had to use a key card to get in the parking garage, in the elevators, you get the idea. He later said he assumed that she was, quote-unquote, bashed, and would be back in an hour or two. He said that he went into his, quote, usual mode of sitting on the couch, wondering where she was, what she was doing, and knowing he couldn't do anything, end quote. At 6:51, Len called Phoebe's iPhone and it went to voicemail. Less than half a minute later, at 6:52 p.m., Aunt called Len, which was something Len said he had never done before. Aunt says the timing of the call was just a coincidence, as Phoebe's phone was at the repair shop, so he couldn't have possibly heard it ring. Len asked to speak to Phoebe about their dinner plans, as he was running a bit late, and Aunt told Len that Phoebe was not home and he didn't know where she was. He told Len about everything he found when he got home, but he neglected to mention the blood. Len told Aunt that he should report her missing, but Aunt dismissed it, saying that the police wouldn't do anything up until 48 hours after she was missing anyways. Panicked, Len called Natalie right after the conversation with Aunt, and they both began calling family and friends of Phoebe to see if anyone had heard from her or knew where she was. Meanwhile, Aunt had a cigarette and a beer and ordered takeaway for one from the Golden Triangle, which was the same Thai restaurant that they were supposed to go to that night. Sometime between 7:06 and 7:09 p.m. on the ground floor of the Balencia, the building's concierge went to look for a broom in the compactor room. She swiped her keycard to grant her access and attempted to open the door, but there was resistance. She was able to push the door open far enough to trigger the motion-detected light, and that is when she made a gruesome discovery. At first, she thought that she saw a mannequin that someone had discarded, but she quickly realized that it was actually the body of a young woman. She panicked and didn't know what to do, so she called her boss, who was also the building manager. He told her to call 000, which is the emergency number in Australia. Police were notified at 7:14 p.m., and they arrive on the scene at 7:20 p.m. The paramedics arrive on the scene 7 minutes later at 7:27 p.m. At this point, Phoebe had been lying there for 18 minutes since the concierge found her. One of the paramedics on scene was Christy Cook, and upon her arrival, she ran to the compactor room, only to be told by a police officer at the door that she couldn't enter because it was a crime scene. No one had actually even checked to see if Phoebe was breathing or if her body was warm. Instead, the police assumed that she was already dead. As a side note, in America, it depends on the state, but people can typically be pronounced dead by doctors, nurses, and emergency personnel, such as police officers, firefighters, and emergency medical technicians, or EMTs. In Australia, however, only doctors and paramedics can legally pronounce someone dead, so they should not have already declared this as a crime scene, and they should have let the paramedics through to determine if Phoebe was still alive. Christy, the paramedic, said that from the doorway, she could see a female lying on her back with cuts to her right thigh and hip. She could see that her right foot was in an unnatural position. The body, quote, showed generalized cyanosis, end quote, which is a bluish coloration. She could not see any spontaneous ventilation or breathing. She said that the woman appeared to be dead from her standpoint of just outside the doorway. When his food arrived at 8:03 p.m., Aunt buzzed the delivery man up. The man informed him of the police downstairs and asked if he knew why they were there. Aunt later told Phoebe's mom, quote, "And that's when I knew. Straight away, I knew." End quote. Around 8:10 p.m., Aunt went downstairs to talk to the police, and he learned that a body had been discovered in the ground floor compactor room. This is when he decided to tell police his girlfriend had been missing. Police asked for a description of Phoebe, and instead of giving a physical description, Aunt immediately went into talking about her depression, the medication she was taking, so on and so forth. Police asked for a physical description and asked for any identifying information like tattoos. They also asked Aunt to see a photo of Phoebe. Aunt showed them a photo and they told Aunt that they believed it was her. Next, Aunt called Len to tell him that Phoebe had been found dead. Word then spread to the rest of Phoebe's family. Thank you. That's all for part one of The Death of Phoebe Hanstrom. I want to point out that Anthony Hample denies any involvement in and or knowledge of Phoebe's death. He's officially been cleared of any involvement or knowledge, and I am not suggesting otherwise. Typically, new episodes of Mystic and Murder are posted every other Sunday, but part two of this case is going to be posted next week. After that, episodes will continue to be posted every other Sunday. You can tune in and subscribe on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and more. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at mysticandmurder.com, and you can check out the website at www.mysticandmurder.com. You can send in an email to mysticandmurder@gmail.com with suggestions, requests, and even personal spooky stories. If you like what you hear and you want to support the podcast, you can go to www.patreon.com/mysticandmurder, you can click support at anchor.fm/mysticandmurder, or you can make a donation at paypal.me/mysticandmurder. Thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you sleep tight. Remember, all things weird lurk at night.